Blog Talk Radio.
How much do you know about how your customers are interacting with your brand? Welcome to this edition of Enterprise Marketing the Future, the show which focuses on how the future of marketing is about performing real-time, being an agile organization to make the most of evolving opportunities to impact customers and profits. I'm your host, Helene Eichler. Join us to stay up on trends and best practices from marketing thought leaders that fuel organizations' current and future marketing effectiveness. We're excited to have Linda Sharp, Customer Relationship Intelligence thought leader and CEO of Relligence, with us to discuss why you need more than traditional customer loyalty metrics to track customer success. Welcome, Linda. Now let's get started. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Helene, for making it easy for me to be here.
Thank you.
And to marketing operations partners and their Marketing Future Forum for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, we're glad to have you. Now, Linda, this is a very hot topic right now. So, you know, there's a lot of metrics flying around out there, so to speak. You know, what do you see as the critical considerations when you're creating a process to map customer success?
Well, I want to start by saying that our focus at Relligence is B2B, high values, just to have that clear. But I think what we are talking about in high value B2B can translate to B2C as well. I think there are five critical considerations that you need to have. And the first is that it's about mutual success and mutual profit. And the second, because your executives are going to want to know this, is the ROI of mapping and tracking the customer experience. And I'll give you a couple examples. For mapping, you could lower the total cost of ownership for the customer. Say, even make a 2 to 5% savings for you. In tracking, you can get to revenue faster. You could cut the attrition rate by X percent. Many companies experience in the neighborhood of 10 to 15% attrition. What if you could cut that back? In both cases, this is number three, start at the end and work backwards. From a customer point of view, like, for example, traditionally we've thought about, oh, well, we've shipped the order. We should be thinking about it from the customer's point of view, like they've received the order. And you should be acquiring customers you want to retain. So that's three. The fourth, and this is hard, I know it's hard, is work with a cross-functional team across the whole customer life cycle. That's a huge problem. And number five is focus on top priority customers, ones you'd want more of. And traditional metrics are looking at everybody. I think you should just focus on the top priority ones. And, well, who are those? Okay. It could be those who make large or regular purchases, ones who pay fast. It could be a prestige customer, maybe. It could be a key to a new market that you want to get into. But our favorite, frankly, is the most profitable. And how do you know who they are? How do you know who's the most profitable? Well, Helene has been so kind to allow us to give you some links on the site there. There's a profitability-focused checklist that could help. We're going to be posting another blog on our website, Relligence.com, in our blog, Why Fly Blind, next Tuesday. So you could look for something there about how to align sales and operations on profit. And then another that you already have a link to is a contribution margin for marketers. And another one, customer success at all costs, we say no. So that can get you down a little bit deeper into this. But, you know, the major things are this has to be mutual and it has to be profitable for everybody. That's where I'd start, Helene.
Great. Well, those are the things you've seen that do work, Linda. Now, where do you find that doesn't work? What have you found that doesn't work with these traditional ways we're all talking about and we see companies are measuring customer value?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you three here, okay? And the first one is really powerful. Executives are flying blind. Their steering wheel is attached to the rearview mirror. They're operating in the past. I mean, they all know that. In fact, I've talked to some executives, and they say, yeah, that's true, and the executives who want to change this are locked up in the trunk, and we'd like to do something different. But what they're doing is they're managing to aggregates and to anecdotal information, to allocations, to headcounts, to trends. And these are lagging and hypothetical indicators. And again, Helena's offered the improving on traditional methods link that you could see what that's about. But what it boils down to is what do people say, not what they do. And that's what I think we need to be looking at, is what do they do. And what they say is superficial. And that was barely adequate in a company-centric world. And it's woefully inadequate in a real-time, customer-centric world. It's not operational. It's not actionable. And here's my point number two about what's missing, is customer experience is siloed. It's a huge problem. Lynn Hunsaker has done a great piece on this, and Helena has given you a link to that as well. And she's talking about 10 ways that things are siloed, that customer experience is siloed. And she points out in her piece that there are two sides of the coin, of course. There's some things that are good about having silos, and there's because it's good for focus, but it's really bad for collaboration. And no, there are no common metrics across these silos. That's what's really missing, and that's not good. What that leads to is my third point, is that executives, in fact, the whole team, the whole management team, the frontline staff, the managers, everybody, no, they don't know what the customer experience is. They don't know what even happens. This is what I think is totally true, is that relationships drive business and that interactions develop them. And these are really critical interactions, but they're buried in siloed systems or not collected at all. And I think we need customer relationship intelligence to bridge those silos, to measure what everyone has in common across all these functions. And that's the piece that's been missing, is we need to be focusing on the customer relationship and on profit. And if we did focus on that, we could measure variable interaction costs, which will get you to a better profit picture than people have right now. We could measure relationship development. Like, the question is, does this interaction that you're doing move the relationship forward or backward? And I'm sure that you can, in your mind's eye, you can think of all of the things that move a relationship backward and some things that move it forward too. But that's why we need relationship value, which we would call the missing metric, and there's a piece on that as well that you can look at a little bit more. I think that's the top line of what's missing, those three points: flying blind, not knowing what's going on, and that things are siloed.
So, Linda, I like that you've talked about relationships here. And given that, let's say, relationships are the secret sauce to customer success, all right, what are some more actionable and operational methods, say, marketers and customer success executives and people can take within an organization to move that needle forward?
Well, thanks so much for that question. It's really important. And I'm going to start by saying that we've got to think differently about this. Steve Jobs was so good in coming up with that line. We need breakthrough versus incremental innovation. We had to really think differently. And the breakthrough that I had when I set out to quantify marketing and tie it to profit, because I knew it had to be tied to profit to get executives' attention, is that it was the relationship that mattered, and that's what really needed to be measured. And I figured out how to do it. I got a patent, and it's one thing to have a patent, but, wow, I have built an incredible team to help me commercialize it. And we built out a full customer experience performance management suite. I'm going to tell you about three of our new methods. And the first one. Oh, thank you.
Please.
The first one is it's really hard to break old ways, you know? And I remember beginning to develop this years ago when people would come, mom and pop root beer would show up, and they would think that if they did something that Coca-Cola did, they'd get the same kind of results. And I would say, oh, no, there's a lot more you have to do. But anyway, this is an assessment of how prepared you are to focus on customer success. And there's a quick quiz on the blog about that, about the customer success score that you could look at later. See if you can answer yes to those questions or not. But it's a reality check that can get a cross-functional, I keep saying that word, cross-functional, management team on the same page. It highlights the process issues that need to be fixed, and then you can verify it after the fact with voice of the customer by a third party to see what customers really value. And I can tell you, out of the hundreds and hundreds of interviews that I've done in my career, rarely, very rarely, is what the customer thinks, what the company thinks the customer would value, what the customer actually does value. There's a big disconnect there. But this is a way to begin to get on the same page. So that's number one. And then number two is now you'll have some process issues that you've discovered yourself and that you've heard from the customers. And then when you have that, look at the most critical ones and map the customer experience. We call that tool or that method a value creation map. And it basically goes deeper than a customer journey map. And another term that people may be familiar with is customer effort score. That's beginning to trend and get some traction over Net Promoter Score or CSAT. But I think the next operational step is to actually quantify the customer effort, and that's what our value creation map can do. We look at, well, what's the value to the brand, to the product, to the experience, all of these from the customer's point of view, and this is revolutionary. What does it cost them? What does it cost you to do that step? How effective is it? You know, we can put a number to all of this step by step. And what we have can lead to making some transformations and fixing some processes that don't work. That's getting to that ROI piece. But it also informs how you might track the customer experience. So I'm going to go for that one. And this one is like a 30,000-foot level view of a customer journey map. And again, you're going to get bored hearing this, Lean, but I'm going to say start with a cross-functional team again and outline some scenarios, interaction by interaction, and do this across acquisition, closing, and retention. And the theme of the scenario would be, what do profitable customers do? And I can tell you that teams who have been doing this work in sales and marketing for a while, they know what a profitable customer does versus one that isn't. And we get their insight and a valuable input and put that down together. We have a list of 350-plus relationship interactions to draw from, and then algorithms that attached to each one or appended to each one for what's the relationship value of this particular interaction and what's the variable interaction cost. And when you have that, you can and play out the scenario, you can begin to manage to relationship patterns because, this will not be a surprise to anyone who's been in the field a while that profitable customers behave differently than ones that aren't. And an underlying theme is that they want a relationship. Why do they want a relationship? Well, it matters. It matters to their infrastructure. It matters to their supply chain. It matters to mission-critical processes. And frankly, it should matter to the company because if you are actually keeping track of what it costs to engage, you'll really know that instead of burying it in fixed expenses. You'll see where to focus on in time to make a difference in the outcome. What if you could tell how a customer is behaving like a profitable one? We'd focus on them. And the ones that were behaving like an unprofitable one or poor profit one, you wouldn't put so much resources to it, right? And if something began to happen that was changing the profit picture or changing the relationship picture, wow, you could focus on that as an exception. And so you're not chasing everybody all the time, but really looking at what's totally important. So thank you for letting me go on about that. But you can tell I am very passionate about it and excited about the possibilities of how we're going to transform business to have a customer focus going forward. So thank you, Helene.
Well, this is some very innovative insights and some very innovative work you're doing here, Linda. We've covered a lot of ground in a short time, but as a wrap-up, what do you want our listeners to take away? What are the three key takeaways for us as marketers?
Okay. And I do have exactly three. How about that? So number one, put your relationship hat on when you're thinking about your sales and marketing sales and retention plans. And think about interactions, not just tactics, but the interactions that would move a relationship forward or backward. Okay? So think about it that way. Because this was another aha that I had in beginning to think about this, was that it's a relationship strategy, a customer relationship strategy, that actually executes corporate strategy. And that's why it's been so hard to get corporate strategy understood throughout the organization. So the question for executives is, what do you really want the relationship to be like moving forward? I mean, if you're selling through alliances or something, well then, hey, maybe you should be thinking about some interactions that would help make those alliances work better. So that's number one, is think that way. And then number two, this is one of my people on my team, Raisheen brings this up all the time. He was my co-creator on the value creation mapping piece, is that if it doesn't create value for the customer, get ready for this, he says, stop doing it. I mean, that's really astounding. Don't do it if it doesn't create value for the customer. I mean, unless it's necessary for administrative or regulatory reasons, then of course you got to do it. But really look at your processes carefully to say, should we really be doing that or not? Okay, and then the third piece, and we're not alone in saying this. Others are beginning to say this. I've seen this from a Gallup report recently, and also Larry Fink is talking about this too, but the point is compete on value, not price or specs. What does that mean? That means relationships drive business value. And we've written a paper that sort of summarizes many of the things I've talked about here today called Relationship, the Foundation of Value, which you can get to from our website. Just ask for it, and I'm happy to send it to you. But I think that it's possible that Marketing Future Forum has it, and Helene will work on that, right, later
yes,
on.
I'll post that to the episode on Blog Talk. I'll post that as a post, as one of the posts we have listed for this podcast, yes.
Okay. Well, and here's an aside that occurred to me as I was getting ready to do this podcast with you guys today. And I was thinking about automation and the Internet of Things and robotics and what people are beginning to talk about there, about, well, what kind of jobs will it be in the future? And this would be just a piece of advice, a piece of insight that occurred to me in doing this, was focus on being good at relationships. That's going to be good for job security for everyone, frankly. So relationships are it. That's all there is, okay? I want to also have a request. So that giving you my three takeaways. But the request is I'd like to have this be an ongoing exchange, and I'm hoping that people in the audience will share what you're doing to quantify relationships, what you're doing to quantify the customer experience or the customer journey. And I think you could use the comment box where you could get back to the recording of this, and not just how are you quantifying all those things, but how are you tying it to business outcomes. It would really be worth taking a look at and knowing more about it. And I want to close by saying thanks to you, Helene. You've been great to work with. You made it easy for me. My customer, my speaker effort was low, okay?
Thank you very much, Linda. And, yes, I encourage anyone even listening, you know, post this podcast. If you're not on the podcast now, if you go back and listen, please do comment on the content we've presented here, any of the any of the blog posts that are listed. We welcome any and all feedback, because it's always valuable for the speakers and for us here in moving forward. All right. Well, Linda, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we'll speak to you again on a future podcast, hopefully.
I actually had one more thing. I forgot to say thank you to Marketing Operation Partners and their Marketing Future Forum again. I mean, I guess this is really getting to the point that I've been making. It's the relationship with Helene, you know, that has pulled this off this morning. So thanks to them for that. But think about that in all of your doings with B2B companies. It's the people that you're dealing with that are what's really important. So thank you.
And, Linda, as we say, at the end of the day, in companies, it's all about the people. It's people who are the companies. So point well taken, and thanks, everybody, and have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you.